Hi, I'm Adam Ringland with SearchCloudApplications.com. I'm here with Sinclair Schuler, CEO of Apprenda, and we're going to be discussing platform as a service today.
You know, and looking at some of the information you've sent me, you know, we're talking about the past landscape and how things are looking ahead in the future. And I noticed, you know, you like to bring up the Gartner's forecasting the market will reach 1.8 billion by 2015. What's going to change from a technology perspective from here to then that will kind of, that will aid that sort of growth?
So I think a couple of components. One is that we're starting to see some of the more major platform vendors get involved in PaaS, which is a good thing for everybody, right? A lot of people say, well, big vendors are going to be competitive to these startups that have built these brilliant businesses. And it's true, but it also up-levels, I think, the messaging for everybody. So more customers start to understand what's going on with PaaS, what it is. That's something that typically is only funded by big dollars coming from big vendors. So I think the overall kind of up-leveling of PaaS in the market happens. And when that happens, I think then what you end up seeing is customers being more aggressive about purchasing habits and also being more scrutinizing about the technologies they're going to evaluate. So all of that, I think, is a rising tide. And in that scenario, you see spending go up, and you'll probably see that aggregate spending go up. So you'll see numbers that are much more interesting going into 2015. The other thing that kind of catches my attention in that number is that it's likely bound to the idea that technologies have become more mature. If you look at platform as a service, it started a couple of years back in a more serious sense on the public side, but public PaaS doesn't generate as much kind of sales dollars as private PaaS would. Private PaaS is sold on premises. The contracts tend to be a little bigger, and you're starting to see vendors that have that focus. Apprenda, for example, I mean, we're exclusively focused on the Global 2000 private PaaS market, and it's about helping those organizations build private cloud with platform as a service. And they're willing to spend money to do that. They're building this in these big data centers, and they want to achieve cloud-like agility in-house, so we're there to equip them. So I think you merge those two things together, and you start seeing some serious kind of headway being made toward significant revenue numbers across the board.
When you mention vendors taking a more mature look at the PaaS market, who do you see kind of coming in now with maybe a more mature focus than they had, let's say, a year ago?
Well, it's not necessarily coming right in. Some have already been there. I mean, look at Microsoft with Azure, for example. Azure's a great technology. It's been around for a little while, and it took its lumps, and it's only gotten better over time. So I think that sort of story ends up getting everybody warmed up to the idea that PaaS is prime time. You see VMware with Cloud Foundry coming to the market, and they're trying to make headway there also. So we're seeing some of these larger vendors either up-leveling the maturity of their existing PaaS offerings or introducing first-time PaaS offerings. And then mix that with the just multitude of startups that have popped up, ranging from public PaaS offerings to folks like us on the private PaaS side, you end up with a real kind of critical mass on the vendor side of things.
Now, when we talk about PaaS, a lot of what we talk about are cost savings and agility. Can you describe, you know, for listeners, how PaaS accomplishes those two goals?
Sure, and actually, before I do that, one thing I would also suggest is that there are two components, right? One is the cost savings and agility, but that's in the context of existing software development practices and existing deployment models. Mm-hmm. There's also a significant new value creation around equipping developers to build modern cloud apps, and that's something that people tend to not talk about in PaaS, and we're very passionate about.
Okay.
So I'll definitely dive into that. But on the cost savings and efficiency side, and agility side of things, we have to look at what's been kind of the historical precedent for application management, deployment, scaling in enterprise IT today. The typical story goes that, you know, an enterprise software developer builds an application, and it might take them a few months to do that, and then they need to deploy the application. And when it's time to deploy the app, they would call IT up. IT would spend 30, 40, 50, 60 days setting up a server, provisioning the OS, configuring it, setting up load balancers. There's a lot of manual activity that happens from code complete to prime time. And that sort of slowdown around what should be a pretty quote-unquote simple task of getting the app up and running is amazing because you spend 2 or 3 months writing the app and then you spend 2 or 3 months deploying it. So that's a huge, huge loss of productivity and agility for both the developers and the IT pros who manage infrastructure. Second, the typical model of deploying applications involves having dedicated server infrastructure or dedicated OS instances on a per-app basis, which is a very, very coarse-grained allocation, right? Like, for example, you'd be paying a Windows Server license every time you needed to host an app on its own OS. Those two things end up resulting in what would be really significant productivity losses and huge cost efficiency problems. So PaaS comes in and says, well, what if all of that could be hidden and abstracted away? What if a developer inside the constraints defined by the IT pros, running a PaaS cloud could, at a button click, publish an application, almost like a blog post, right? Like it's up and running, and the load balancers are all configured for you, and the OSs are prepped and ready to go. And furthermore, the ongoing management tasks of, say, scaling the app out or in are managed by the PaaS as well. All those agility problems we talked about go away entirely. That's something that is no longer part of the problem, and we've essentially reframed the problem and brought in a new solution, which passes. On the cost efficiency side, most platform offerings are now focusing on really dense multi-tenancy. So the idea being that you can pack lots and lots of apps into single OS instances, which means you're getting better utilization out of your infrastructure and your OS licenses. And that's huge. The amount of cost savings there is tremendous for any organization. So I think those are the kind of ways those two savings happen.
One thing I was curious about is PaaS seems to take a lot of, I think, what people would describe as the drudgery of the work out of it. It seems to do a lot of the things that maybe aren't interesting to people and are maybe just kind of, monotonous sort of labor. And it allows them to spend their time differently. How do you see PaaS reshaping the way an enterprise spends its IT resources?
Well, I think it ends up reshaping it such that everybody's focusing more on value creation and less on, kind of these mundane tasks that you're talking about. They're boring because you don't really create value out of them. Deploying an app isn't the phase that creates value in building the application. It's a necessary step to get it in front of people. Value creation happens when people are writing code, and that's just a fundamental truth across the board. So I think it reshapes it where every cycle investment on the enterprise IT side gets refocused on those value-creating points of writing code. But to talk about the point that I mentioned earlier, it also becomes kind of PaaS, in this case, the engine for new types of value creation. Mm-hmm. One thing that most PaaS vendors do not talk about, because most of them don't touch, is that while the deployment and management aspects of PaaS are super valuable and super important, and in fact, I mean, we do it better than anybody else, in my opinion, the next question becomes, like, what's next? What is PaaS supposed to do for me? And if you look at enterprise IT applications, they're becoming much, much more complex. They're becoming distributed. They're becoming multi-tenant in their own right. They're becoming high scale in some cases. Those are patterns or requirements that PaaS offerings today simply do not help with. They help you deploy the app. So if we're going to focus on value creation, how do we help developers build these really new types of architectures without having to learn some black art skill set when it comes to multi-tenancy or distributed apps? So when we look at the PaaS market and we kind of think about it over the next couple of years, PaaS vendors need to step up the game and say, well, we're providing APIs and out-of-the-box architecture patterns that allow a developer to write real world-class cloud applications without any of the effort. So, you know, our entire company thesis has been around that. And that's why when we look at PaaS vendors, we ask, what components do they provide? Is it just deployment and management? And if so, what's the real value over time there? Or do they provide the APIs and frameworks that let you write real powerful modern cloud apps?
Is there an education component to all this? You know, I'm curious that at some places I imagine there are people who have been, you know, kind of sitting around stuck with this monotonous work for so long that maybe they don't know how to do anything else at this point. Is there an education component from the PaaS vendors?
There is a very big education component. We see it every day at Apprenda. We talk to people about this day in and day out, my whole team, right, both in the enterprise and people in the industry that might be analysts or what have you. And we find that there are three big buckets. There are those who have a very good fundamental understanding of PaaS. And in the buying market, the Global 2000, that group typically has active, real PaaS projects going on because they understand the pains and they understand the savings. There's a second group that has pursued private cloud and understands private cloud very well, and it's not a stretch for them to imagine how PaaS brokers into that. So there's a little less education required there. They have the fundamentals down. Then there's the everybody else bucket, which is the majority of the market right now, where exactly what you said, they've been in kind of this traditional way of thinking, and they haven't stopped to say, well, is there an opportunity to reshape our processes and our thoughts? So I think there's where the big education burden is for everybody. But we also see that coming around. I mean, if you compare last year this time to this year, if I have a random conversation with somebody on the street about PaaS, obviously the tech street proverbial, they right away understand what it is that we do if we give them a little bit of a description. So that's very encouraging to me that I think the education burden will relax over the next couple of years here.
Is there anything that's still a barrier? Is there any question you find yourself, you know, still answering more often than not when you work with people in that third bucket?
Yeah, you know, the public-private discussion comes into play quite often, and that's a barrier for people. If you look at quote-unquote traditional PaaS, it's been offered in a public-only form factor, which we think is not in tune with where the market is right now. That's a huge barrier. You're talking to organizations who have thousands of custom apps, many of which, for regulatory or security or compliance reasons, can't move kind of to public cloud. And they're being told by these vendors, well, you know, you're wrong. You just need to move them. We took an approach where we said, well, what if we could bring the PaaS to the enterprise instead of the enterprise to the PaaS? What if we could productize that layer and let them operate a hyper-efficient data center as a platform offering and expose that to their developers and IT pros? Would that get over that hurdle? And I think that's one of the education pieces, is that you can get that cultural shift to happen if you're not ideological about the public-private discussion and help enterprises understand they can achieve value privately. And then later, if they choose to find certain apps that they can move to kind of public workloads, they'll do that. And they might do that in 6 months, a year, 2 years. That has to be on their own pace. But you can't have that rigid barrier in front of them.
Is the public-private, to me, the way the public-private cloud argument is framed most of the time is that it's an either-or decision. Is that kind of a false dilemma?
It is, and that's a big kind of part of our strategy and hypothesis, right? It's something that is a false dilemma, because if you look at a properly built cloud architecture, one that a PaaS offering, for example, like ours, is that you shoot for symmetry. Can you layer that on top of any arbitrary infrastructure in a plug-and-play way? Meaning, I can have a PaaS layer in-house, I can build applications against it, and know that I can have a PaaS layer running, say, on some other public cloud infrastructure, and have application portability. So symmetry is key there, and if you can produce that, then you have a kind of a false dilemma in that debate. The problem is that in practice, what's happened is that since most PaaS providers have been public only, there has been no symmetry. So it does become an either-or for those people, and that's why I think when we look at PaaS today, it's evolved quite a bit over the past couple of years, because most PaaS vendors are saying, look, our layer is downloadable, our layer can be installed on everything from a laptop to a cluster of thousands of servers, or you can deploy your app to an equal kind of symmetric instance running in the public cloud, and then everybody's happy in that context.
Was there a logic to the initial push of PaaS vendors just, you know, pushing towards public as opposed to, you know, allowing people to do these things in-house?
Well, I think probably because a lot of the early traction was around kind of shadow IT and shadow ops, right? People frustrated with their processes and having purview over some small part of the infrastructure that they could say, well, we're just going to push this out. But the reality of the matter is that's kind of beachhead, and that's a very small segment of all the custom apps in enterprise, right? So the logic was probably appropriate in terms of early traction, but I don't know that from a strategy perspective it makes sense when 95% of the apps are still going to stay inside the firewall within enterprise IT. So I think that's where we're going to see either PaaS vendors moving to a model where they're introducing private components if they don't already have it, or ones that are native public-private from the get-go, which most PaaS startups are today.
One thing I don't think we discuss enough when we talk about PaaS, and I certainly don't have a firm understanding of it, is how the licensing fees work or how pricing models work. Could you go into that a little bit?
Sure, and I can give a high-level description of how ours works. I don't know if reflected across the industry, but basically the way private PaaS licensing works, as we see it, is that it tends to be around a key managed resource. So when you look at something like Apprenda, an enterprise might layer it across 10 servers, 500 servers, 1,000 servers, whatever it might be. Those servers represent an aggregate memory footprint. Memory is the important quantifier when it comes to app management, right? How many apps you're going to support on that infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So we license our technology based on the total memory across a cluster that somebody's running in their private cloud. And that gives the enterprise the ability to fine-tune what sort of infrastructure is going to support it. Are they going to have a few very, very massive servers underlying their private PaaS cloud, or are they going to have hundreds of commodity servers? We want that question to be answered only by the vendor and not dictated by the licensing. I've seen people do it on a per-server model or per-core model, which is also what seems to be relatively commonplace out there in the private PaaS market. Public PaaS tends to be pay-per-use, right? It's going to be based on certain parameters with respect to compute, storage, and memory resources that are consumed. So if you publish an application to public cloud, you can expect that you're going to have some sort of buckets, almost t-shirt sizes, like small, medium, and large, like you would see on Amazon's EC2. And you choose what resources you want to assign to your app, and you're going to get billed monthly for that.
One thing I've been curious about with the PaaS market, as I've seen different vendors go different ways as far as what languages they support. There are some that seem to want to be broad and have generic support for almost all languages, and there are others who want to seem to specify on one language. Do you have any thoughts on that, you know, in regards to the market in general, or maybe in regards to what you guys are doing?
Yeah, both, actually. So, you know, in the market in general, I think one thing we have to ask ourselves is what is it that PASS is trying to accomplish that will help influence whether we should be talking about multi-language or single language. What I mentioned earlier is that one common thing that all PASS vendors must do is that they have to provide facilities for easy deployment and management of apps. That is something that is very easy to achieve in a cross-language compatible way, because typically it means being able to push applications out to servers. So what we do know is that every language and its byproducts, the compiled assets or, you know, the actual application components, are bits and bytes at the end of the day. If you want to install them, it's a matter of moving files from one server to another, doing configuration work. That's something that's an easy lift to do in a very common way across 50 languages. Now, if we introduce a second component and say PASS must help developers build very modern cloud app architectures, then things become very tricky. Programming models across languages are all very different from one another. And if you're going to try and tackle that challenge, you have to pick a language or two that you're going to focus on and provide APIs and frameworks and very deep integrations with those languages and runtimes that help developers build world-class cloud apps. That's where I think a lot of people get stuck in this discussion. If you look at the market, anything that's quote-unquote polyglot, many language, they tend to provide value around that deployment and management side of things, but they provide very little value with respect to helping build modern cloud apps. So you're essentially building like yesterday's web apps, but deploying them in a modern environment. So our strategy has been that since we believe both of those components are super valuable, the deploy and manage side of things, as well as the strategic component of help people build next generation cloud applications, we take a best of breed approach. We understand that it requires very deep integration. It is unlikely that you can replicate that integration across languages at once. So we focus on .NET because of that, and we want the .NET developers to have that ultimate value of helping move them into the next generation app architecture arena. And it really is an interesting problem. I mean, you know, everybody's placed bets in different categories here to see what happens, but we're pretty confident that you're not going to see the cross-language stuff work over time, very much like you don't see cross-language IDEs. If you're a .NET developer, you use Visual Studio, and typically you're writing in C#. If you're a Java developer, you use Eclipse. There are reasons why we haven't seen text editing even work at a multi-language fashion at scale.
Okay.
And, you know, when I ask myself that, then you have to ask yourself, well, what makes us think that that's going to happen at a runtime level if we can't get it at the IDE level perfect at this point?